Good morning, everybody. This is Brendan from ABSH Computers in Melbourne.
And Stuart from Velocity Technology in Hong Kong. And we are going to talk about this week's cybersecurity updates and topics that are of interest to both Brendan and myself.
So,
Brendan, why
Stu,
don't you kick it off?
did you you'd have to be probably living under a rock to not have heard of the LinkedIn 117 million user data that was for sale on the dark web this week?
Yes, and the interesting thing about this, of course, is this is not a new breach. This is actually from 2012, when LinkedIn at the time admitted that they'd lost about 6 million records. And now, of course, it turns out that it wasn't 6 million. It was just a little bit more than that, in the tune of another 111 million accounts that were lost at the time.
Do you think they didn't know that and therefore estimated the 6.5 million, or do you think that was an attempt to try and hide the leak? Because, I mean, if you're trying to hide a leak, 6.5 million or 117 million, I mean, you're still talking millions of records, right? People are still going to be unhappy regardless.
I mean, I would have personally thought that if they thought it was 117 million, they just would have come out with it at the time, because surely, I guess I could be wrong here, but people that try to hide these kinds of things, it always comes back to bite them in the ass later on. You know, the number of times when people, oh yeah, well, you know, we said it was only this, that's actually like double that or triple that. And it's like the credit card stuff that came out a couple of years ago with one of the major US retailers, and you know, it was sort of every 2 weeks it was sort of back in the news again. You know, instead of it just being over and done with once, you know, and it was ended up being sort of in the major news every 2 weeks because, oh yeah, you know, it's even worse than we thought last time, and so it hits the major news cycles again. So you would think you're just going to eat it and get it over and done with once rather than have this resurface time and time again.
It does highlight a key limitation, and I mean, this is a hack from a long time ago, 2012, but you know, even clients that I deal with now, many of them really don't have any type of systems in place where they could identify exactly what was compromised in the event they were compromised. So
Yeah, well, you know, even with a lot of the clients that we deal with, you know, and we certainly deal with, you know, I wouldn't say banks per se, but sort of reasonably high value financial clients. And for the most part, a lot of these are still doing all that is actually required of them under regulatory requirements rather than sort of taking the next step up. Now that is changing because there's just been such sort of an absolute swamp of sort of hacks and breaches and cybersecurity news that there is a sort of a general move to sort of preempt any of the sort of the regulatory requirements and try to be, you know, better than that. And partly too from some of the clients that we talk to, from their investors. You know, if I'm going to give you $100 million to go and invest in some country, then I want to make sure that you're protecting that asset. You know, so there are a lot more questions around that. But for general sort of SMEs and even sort of medium enterprises, you know, there's still this kind of attitude of kind of like Sony in some ways, you know, sort of like, you know what, I can live with the results as long as they're not too bad. And, you know, what can they possibly do? I've got backups, haven't I? Everything else doesn't really matter too much.
Well, I do say any entrance into the news is good, regardless whether it's good or bad. Free publicity at the end of the day.
Yeah, if it was any news is good news kind of thing. Yeah, I think the date. Well, see that comes back to short memories of consumers to a certain extent. You know, do consumers vote with their wallet? You know, if you look at the PlayStation versus Microsoft sales, and certainly that breach hasn't hurt Sony, has it?
Same as Target. I mean, you look at Target, there was a lull for a period of time, but you know, people are still shopping there. David Jones, same thing. I'm guessing that it would be a lot different though if it was a continual story. You know, like you were saying before, if it were continually in the news, but yeah, certainly these once-off type occasions. It's almost like we're desensitized now to hacking attempts because there's so many of them. And I certainly see that also, not only in the SME space, but also in some of the enterprise space where they're like, yeah, if we get hacked, it's not a big deal. It's just like it's an expected thing that's going to happen. And the public's desensitized to it, so it doesn't really matter.
I mean, I personally think that will change to a certain extent. I mean, it's like, you know, people that have lost data because their backups weren't working or something like that tend to be a lot more anal about that stuff going forward. So, you know, and the issue that happens these days, of course, is, you know, with things like credit card theft and the breaches that happen with the big companies, it doesn't necessarily hurt the consumer that much, because if there are unauthorized credit card transactions, well, the credit card companies have to eat that, don't they? So I think there is a move within the sort of the banking and credit card industry to put the burden of those things not necessarily on themselves, but on the people that get breached. So you know, if you're a Target or a David Jones or whatever else, then if you have to pay for those breaches, you know, and the consequences of that over the next 2 or 3 years, then maybe you'll spend a bit more money in making sure your systems are up to spec. But, you know, the consequences, of course, is what is it for the individual user, and we should go, why should they care?
I think you'll also find businesses' mindset will change rapidly when mandatory breach reporting comes in. I don't know what the laws are like over there in Hong Kong, but certainly in Australia, you know, there's a draft bill in Parliament already to try and bring that in. So whilst now...
Yeah, well, who does it affect, though? Listed companies or retailers? I mean, who does it actually target?
It's unknown at the moment. I know that Information Ombudsman here is certainly pushing as a blanket, you know, mandatory reporting, but as per usual, there'll be lobby groups and small business forums that will kind of say, well, you know, like when we had the GST coming in, it's going to create too much paperwork and too much compliance, red tape, and it's going to cost businesses, and those costs are going to be passed on to the consumers, and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, you know, I know here in Hong Kong, you know, we have the Securities and Futures Commission here, which regulates the people like the funds and the asset managers and the advisors and so on, and they don't have specific requirements over that yet, but they're making noises down that road. I mean, there was a circular issued earlier this year where they had done a number of audits of mostly larger licensed corporations and sort of then issued the circular saying, you know, we noticed that even in larger corporations, while they have a security focus, that there are some areas with which they are weak, and they sort of went through that. And then there was a number of those around sort of risk assessment and security awareness training for staff and all those kinds of things. And then on the other hand, you know, we have some clients in Singapore, and the Monetary Authority of Singapore there is a lot more high-handed. So they had a notice issued this month where basically if you get a cybersecurity ransomware and you're a licensed corporation, you have 1 hour to notify them that you've had that after you've discovered that. You know, so that the actual breach reporting in Singapore is a lot stricter than here, perhaps almost anywhere.
I don't know too many companies that would be even capable of delivering the breach, you know, within an hour. Most organisations certainly don't even know that they've been breached.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess back to LinkedIn, you know, what does that mean for the average user or the business professional that's using LinkedIn? I guess the thing there is, of course, is A, make sure that you've changed your password in the last 5 years.
Yeah. And that was a big thing, right? And they even said on there in the post that, you know, we took steps for the 6.5 million that were identified initially to invalidate all their passwords and have them reset when they log in. And they also,
yeah, I had to do mine. I had to choose a different password. And of course, now I have two-factor authentication on, so you know, even if someone got my password, they can't necessarily then use that to get into LinkedIn. Like that's the advice that we would have now is that everybody now, or nearly everybody that has any serious online service, gives you the ability to have two-factor authentication, you know, using Google Authenticator or using SMS or using something. And, you know, with all of this breaches and the news about this going on, is it just take that extra 5 minutes to set it up and the extra few seconds, you know, that to authorize that going forward, and, you know, you're a lot more safer online.
Indeed. I mean, and they even make it easy for you, right? Because you can, you know, you can add your remembered devices or frequent devices. And so once it's enabled, you really, the impact to you from a login point of view is negligible. And I think that's one thing that really does scare people. They're like, oh, well, I don't want to have to type my authentication code in every single time I want to log in. But
So, I mean, I think most big companies, you know, your LinkedIn's and your Google's and Facebook's, they recognize that. They want to make it easy, but at the same time, they want to make it so secure as well.
Yeah. And obviously, other items in the news this week, the new DMA locker version 4.
Yeah, our weekly ransomware roundup going forward. Yeah, there's a couple of ones this week. So DMA locker 4, which was an evolution in how encryption and public key, private key goes on. You know, this is, they're rapidly changing. You know, their earlier versions this year were not as well engineered as some of the others. And security researchers were able to recover the decryption passwords because they were actually kept on the computers. And of course, now they're using servers in the background to issue the actual the key that gets used, so that the decryption key now never touches the computer. And of course, so now you have the choice, you know, pay up or restore from backup.
Yes. certainly the FBI had a few interesting comments to say around that.
Oh, the FBI's always said don't pay them. You know, I guess it follows governments in a lot of places where it's, you know, we don't negotiate with terrorists, we don't deal with terror, you know, we don't all of that kind of thing. So they've always said, you know, don't pay up. You know, you're encouraging criminals to do that again. But, you know, when it's all your photos that you've had of your kid for the last, you know, 10 years or whatever else, or your business is on the line, I think they're being a little bit disingenuous to say, oh, you shouldn't pay it. If that's your only real choice, then of course you should. But of course, you know, it would be better if you had, you know, a decent backup or security systems in place so that you don't get infection in the first place.
Yes, indeed. And look, you know, that's, I guess, well planned and thought out backup strategies also, because, you know, certainly CryptoLocker now targets certain backup technologies and tries to disable them. And I
think there'll be an evolution of that going forward. You know, we're scratching the surface here in terms of, you know, what some of these systems can potentially do. And I would say stay tuned here, because I think we've seen a rapid number of new entries into this market, I say, in inverted commas, so far this year. I saw some stats earlier this month that said that there were some 40 to 50 odd new forms of crypto ransomware this year. You know, when you consider that this, as an effective category, is less than 3 years old as a type of malware, that's, you know, and last year there were maybe half a dozen or so. This is, again, we're now seeing everybody jump in on this, because it's just, it works, unfortunately, you know.
It's a business. It's a good business, you know. They're making $30 million a day.
Yeah, well, I saw some stats. Again, this is from an article I read that they $200 million they estimate. I think it was the FBI that estimated had been made on crypto ransomware in the first 3 months of this year, which puts it pretty close to being a $1 billion business.
Yeah. And no tax.
And no tax.
I guess the core thing there, though, is, you know, the key message is it is a business. You know, it's not just a couple of script kiddies that are generating this type of advanced malware. And whilst from a technology point of view, it's, you know, we're seeing the very basic products coming out right now. You know, you're going to see a massive ramp up in how technical they are and what they can
capabilities do. The yeah. distribution networks. I mean, there was actually another good one from this week. Was one of the ones that have been reasonably successful has shut its doors, and you know, they I think it was ESET had noticed that they seemed to be shutting down, and reached out to them on customer service and said, well, since you're shutting down, would you give out your master decryption password? And they said, sure, here it is. And so they actually published it. So now there are actually decryption tools for that particular strain of ransomware. I guess they made enough money to live on for the rest of their lives and have decided to retire before they get caught or something. But,
exactly right. That's a smart criminal. That's it.
But the interesting thing there was is that their distribution network, and or they as they called it, distributors, are now moving to distribute. I think it's Crypto XXX, Crypto XXX. So, you know, it's moved on. That was Tesla Crypt, by the way. So Tesla Crypt has retired, and their distributors have now moved on to distributing another form of crypto ransomware. And, you know, so this is what this highlights, is this is a business. You know, they have a distribution network of suppliers that will distribute their product for them. You know, and presumably there's some form of profit share in that.
I was going to say, when you mentioned before that they were shutting down, I wonder if they had either A, brought on a new product which is far more successful or capabilities are better, or is it just a case of, you know, they've made their money and they're retiring, they hit their goals and they sold off, you know, the assets that they have, or they've decided there was no value in selling them off, so they've given out their master password and off they go.
Yeah, well, you know, you think about it, you know, if they've made $30 million, I mean, I have no idea what they've made, but I guess there could be someone tries to figure that out. Let's say they made $30 million and it was a couple of guys that had some encryption and programming experience. You know, that's, you know, if you're an Eastern European or something like that, that's quite a comfortable life, right?
Exactly right. And if we shift gears a little bit and talk about you know, trying to, what we're doing to try and protect against this type of stuff. I don't know if you saw the news, but in the news, I think it was today or yesterday, Azure published an update that they will no longer accept passwords that appear in on a password dictionary.
Yeah, so they've ramped up. In fact, and I guess I would imagine that this was already in the works, but specifically on a Technic blog on Microsoft, this was sort of in the same page as the as their comment on the LinkedIn 117-minute leaked passwords. And what they're saying is that they will ban what they call commonly used bad passwords. So they're going to put these against it when you create a new password or change your password. They will make sure that it's not something that's commonly used in a dictionary attack.
Super smart. I think that's just incredibly clever. I think it's well overdue, but you know, they're one of the only, and I wonder whether that's using or leveraging some of the Azure assets like machine learning or some of those technologies in order to deliver that functionality in the back end. And I also wonder whether that's going to flow through to Server 2016. Will we be able to do that for AD?
It'd be good if they could. I mean, I guess in theory, there's, you know, it's not that hard to just have some kind of service that you could put down and run a hash against some known ones that you should not use. And, you know, it could be very, very, very quick to do a lookup and just check that, you know, that isn't a stupid password like, you know, password or, you know, 123 monkey or something incredibly common. You know? I think I remember seeing that recently, you know, where the most commonly used, if you have a look at the LinkedIn password, you know, the most common used password back then was sort of 12345, and the second most common password was 123456. Sort of, you know, monkey 123 was number 12 or something like that.
Yeah, you're spot on. People, and it comes down to, you know, consumers want something that is easy to use and simple. And, you know, 123456 or password or QWERTY or dragon or, you know, they're easy passwords to remember and easy to type in. I mean, I can tell you, I've got some clients right now who, against our advice, every user has the same password.
Yeah. I've had clients in the past where the, you know, the owner of the company had XYZ ABC or ABC XYZ. Those were the two passwords that were switched between.
Yeah, and the other common one is the company name, you know, company name, yeah. 2016 or company name and an exclamation mark or something. I mean, there was also something in the news this week about Google planning to get rid of passwords altogether.
Yeah, they're trying to phase out passwords and they're going to use sort of a trust score. So, you know, that if it's a service that doesn't meet a high level of trust, maybe like a game, then they will try to profile you on, you know, where your location is, what device you're using, what nearby Wi-Fi networks are, how fast you type, and they'll, you know, a lot of that can be fingerprinted against you in the same way that sort of your handwriting can or your walking style can. Yeah. And all those kinds of things, so that they build up sort of, you know, that there'd be multiple of these things which says, well, if, you know, if you're using this device and then you're on this Wi-Fi network, you're probably okay. Whereas if it's a high security thing, maybe like a banking app, you know, that there'd be a higher level of requirement, then maybe there does need to be a PIN or something. But, you know, for the vast majority of stuff, it would just be, you know, profiling you on sort of common things that they can do based on, you know, how secure it needs to be.
Combine that with some two-factor authentication and some biometrics, and you know, we could reach a point where passwords are no longer.
Well, Windows 10 tried to do away with passwords, and you know, so you've got Windows Hello that recognise your face, or you have fingerprint readers now, which you can use on, say, things like Apple devices and Android devices, where you use that to authenticate against. So, you know, there is a general move away from this because, you know, you can't use the same password, and which means that you either have to remember them or you have to rely on some other mechanism to store them for you anyway. So, you know, move away from them.
Indeed. But I think we're just on about 20 minutes, unless there's anything else that piqued your interest over the last week.
Oh, I think that's a good wrap-up of the main stuff for now. But, we'll meet again next week, same time, same place.
Sounds good. Thanks, Stu.
All right. Thanks, Brendan.